Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on, online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
Hey guys, I'm Umar Pagan Amfike Pagan alongside Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf. This is another episode of Binge Watch, our first one since the end of Game of Thrones. And we're going to take a look at the brand new Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery. As you know, Binge Watch is our spin-off show that's dedicated to all things television. This one was released this week on CBS All Access in the United States and on Netflix globally. It stars Michelle Yeoh, Jason Isaacs, Sonequa Martin-Green from, you would know her from The Walking Dead, and she is the main protagonist. This show is all about her character, Michael Burnham, right? It's the first time we're seeing an African-American woman lead a Star Trek show. We've had a woman lead it, we've had an African lead it, and now we get to see an African-American woman lead it.
Don't make the same mistake that some newspapers made.
They made mistakes.
What? I think it might have been Vulture or somebody did like the first time. The headline had been shortened, it looks like, from an African-American woman to an African-American, and everyone was just posting pictures of Sisko
going, what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Oh, poor Captain Sisko.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do we think? Because, yeah, I loved it. I thought this was a glorious start to a new Star Trek series.
It was the best birthday present I could get. It dropped. I've been a huge fan of Star Trek. Next Gen was my, like, Star Trek was always on. And I think we talked before about the long drought. Like, after Star Wars, there wasn't much to see. And Star Trek would be on, you go to any country in the world on holidays, turn on television at 11 o'clock at night, and Star Trek.
Some Star Trek is on.
Trek will be on somewhere on some channel.
And Next Gen was the first time we got to see something new on TV, like, for the first time, right?
And it was, like, appointment television. I think in Ireland it was 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. When it got to the later seasons, it was prime time. It was like, this is the main thing you want to see. And I dug into that huge. I remember going to a kind of convention organizer's screening of Voyager.
Oh.
It had been videotaped and sent over from the US because the internet was not a thing back then.
Oh, fantastic.
That's great.
And watching it and thinking, this show has the most potential of any Star Trek show I've ever seen.
Yes.
And then I was massively disappointed.
Over 7 years.
Yes.
Every time they introduced an enemy more powerful than the Borg.
Yeah. I think Enterprise came after Lost. So by that point, I realized that I don't actually have to watch all of a TV show if I'm not on board with it. Like, I don't have to wait for it to get better. I can't actually stop watching.
Can't give
things.
Up. Yeah, yeah. I think over here, when they used to start showing the Star Trek with Patrick Stewart, my dad liked watching it.
Mm.
But I think I was way too young. So I always got really bored.
Mm.
It just always felt slow. It felt like, you know, politics. Where's the fighting?
It was talking in politics.
With your, fire guns.
Wrestling with your morals is not a quick thing.
I was a child. I want to see guns.
You can't do quick edits around that.
But I will say, I really, really like this one.
Yeah.
I really like Star Trek Discovery. I like the films. I like the idea of the Star Trek. I like the idea of the Kirk and the earlier sort of original Star Trek. But sitting down to this one, pressing play, and then 15 minutes in, I'm like, yeah, yeah, this is my Star Trek.
This is great.
This is going to be my Star Trek, right? Yeah, and I'm on board.
That's nice. That's nice. I like that all three of us are on board. I mean, I was genuinely excited. That cold open, after we see the Klingons again, we're reintroduced to the Klingons. Mm. Like and a opening, big welcome back.
Opening with the Klingons talking in Klingon with subtitles.
So,
that's like,
so
that's
strong.
Ballsy.
Yeah, ballsy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, who and, are know, these people? What's wrong with their faces? Yeah. Why are they like that? Why is that one white? Why is that one black? Why is that one burnt umber? They're like, why are they all wearing incredibly spiky clothes?
And we're reintroduced to them as being bad guys again, because for a long time, Klingons are now part of the Federation.
For a long time, they've been Michael Dorn.
They have. Yeah.
Commander
they've been
Worf.
Worf, and they're kind of good guys with some rogue elements, but no. Now we have the Steve Bannon of Klingons. I mean, here's a guy that's all about unifying.
Does he have his own website?
I don't know. He's even more, I mean...
Remain Klingon!
The remain vote. Yeah. My God, I mean, it's a little on the nose with that.
A bit much.
But that was incredibly interesting to me. It's like we've seen you mentioned before. Like I think in the next gen, the Klingon Empire is basically in decline. Mm. They've kind of like become like pets to the Federation. Almost like they fight a little bit, but like they're not. They've got their scrappy things. They'll bite each other, but we won't bother them too much. I love the idea that, first of all, he's a religious fanatic in a way. They're talking about Kallus. If you don't know who Kallus is, Kallus was like an originator of a lot of the Klingon. Code and honor code and all that kind of stuff. And he kind of turned up in the next gen when somebody cloned him.
Oh, okay.
But he thought he was the real Kallus, and he later went on to be kind of a figurehead for them. So hearing about Kallus and they've all drifted from his light and trying to get back into that is a nice tie into everything before. But the idea of we come in peace is a fatal greeting.
Yes.
And it's kind of developed more in the second episode of like, this is... The Klingons are afraid of the Federation subsuming their culture.
Yes.
Mm. And that is an incredibly modern take that hasn't really been seen. Like, I mean, there's talk about like the empire crumbling from within or barbarians outside the gates.
Yep.
It's never the barbarians are fearing civilization coming. Yep. And I think that they spend enough time with the Klingons that...
I've heard that, right?
I think from articles as well, it's saying that like you're going to stay with the Klingons a lot as well. They're not just the mist. They could have done the thing like Dunkirk where you never saw the Klingons, where it was just the ships and trying to figure that out. But they're making them characters.
Yeah. And I think that was... And I think for me, that was quite interesting because, I always remembered the Klingons as Worf, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, but weren't they kind of nice? I know there were some rogue elements and stuff. And the other thing I wanted to ask was, is this new Klingon, is it just me or do they look different from the old?
Oh, they're very different.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah,
they're even different from the ones from the J.J. Abrams movies.
Yeah.
Like, they're way more ridged, but ridged in a very different way.
Yeah,
they're no longer the Mars bar foreheads. They're kind of like Mars bars all over their face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't mind that.
I don't mind that. I'm okay
I mean,
with
we
that,
were talking about this before, and, you know, Star Trek's been around for so long that I think I just want them to keep telling good stories. I couldn't care less about continuity or the look. I mean, the original one was in the 60s.
Even though
this is set 10 years before... the original Trek and after Scott Bakula's Enterprise, I don't want to see that oldie stuff.
No.
I'll get annoyed with that, right? I want something that looks like it was made in 2017.
Or
it's got to be 2017 plus. It's not 1960s plus.
Yes. Correct. Yes, correct. Yes, and you know, and of course, this is set in that universe, which is referred to as the Prime Universe.
So we should say that because that's going to get confusing at some point because it is stupid and dumb.
So if you don't know, there are kind of two universes, right? The Prime Universe.
Well, actually, there's two contract agreements.
Oh, two contract agreements. Exactly.
Because CBS All Access?
That's right.
Yeah.
CBS have the TV rights because that's where Star Trek came from, but Paramount have the
movie rights.
Movie rights.
Oh,
and
they
got mixed up, I think, when UPN got launched because Voyager was a prime launcher of
UPN network.
The Paramount network, but now they're split in certain ways. So the Prime Universe and the Kelvin Universe are ways of saying, like, movies are here, TV shows are
Paramount Universe and the CBS Universe.
TV shows and streaming will always be over here, and they will never really connect.
Correct. And so the Kelvin Universe is what they refer to as the J.J. Abrams movies because it was the USS Kelvin in that movie that got destroyed, that changed the timeline.
Yeah.
And the Prime Universe is the 1960s Gene Roddenberry universe that kind of spills over.
That goes all the way to Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, and everything.
All of that stuff, right?
Okay,
so,
cool.
Now that that's out of the way. Out of the way.
Moving along.
We move along, and then after the Klingons, we get to see... Michelle Yeoh, baby.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh and Sonequa Martin-Green on this planet you know, doing what they should do as Federation officers, helping a planet that's in trouble without giving themselves away.
Yeah. And then failing miserably to not give themselves away.
Exactly.
I mean, I like that the fact that she mentions, I mean, I think it's probably the early days of Starfleet. She does mention we have to do this job. They got to
They don't
fix
talk
this
about
threat,
the prime directive.
But they talk about General Order Number 1.
General Order Number 1, yep.
Which is that you can't really impact the development of a species if they're not at warp capability or whatever like that. So you can't just go down and give everybody
water filters or fire
or whatever like that, or transporter technology and say, all right, we'll be back in 20 years when you're about to destroy the world.
See you in a few.
Yeah.
And that opening sequence was really, really cool. There was a nice amount of banter between the two of them. You got you got a lot of character development in like 3 minutes. And you really felt for these characters. I mean, Sonequa Martin-Green, I'm really enjoying Michael Burnham because she feels as rash and emotional as Kirk was, which was a lot more than Sisko, who was always weirdly calm, no matter
and
what.
And doing that weird face thing with his kid. Remember, he used to run his hand over the kid's
down
face.
The face.
Sisko got badass when he shaved his head, so maybe
and grew a goatee.
Yeah, that's okay. Got
before
good.
We get any further, just to keep people who have not seen anything, Uma just referred to Sonequa and Michael. Yeah, you know, like the main character. Yeah, we have to get. Let's get that
because this
going
is driving
first,
me nuts as well.
Because it's going to start confusing people soon.
The main character is called Michael Burnham.
And
Michael Burnham is a she.
Yes, yes.
Because the TV show was created by Brian Fuller.
Yeah.
And Brian Fuller has this habit in all of his TV shows of naming his female characters with male names.
Yes.
And I mean, they've spun it. Apparently, there was like, there's two at least newscasters or broadcasters in the US that are female that have the name Michael. And they thought it worked from there. And also, they thought it looked nice for the future because the prime thing about the prime Trek is that we've left all our petty, most of our petty little kind of
like countries aren't even mentioned.
It's like we're not going to get squabbles over calling each other names. I mean, kids can be cruel, but we've gotten past that, hopefully. Yeah. So a girl can be called Michael and it's fine. I'd like them to address it somehow in the show, though. Like, her father's name was Michael, apparently, so it seems to be something along those lines, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But it is very odd.
Yes, so yeah, if you don't know anything about it, if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this podcast, so Uma's not messing up when he says Michael and then referring to it as she.
Yeah.
Just FYI, guys. Yeah.
Okay,
the voice of non-track there.
Yeah, I love that. I would clear that
up. Just jump in anytime we get lost in the bush, in the weeds.
Yep. Also, I think it's important to note that if you haven't seen it yet, please watch it before listening to this because there are going to be a lot of spoilers.
Probably too late for you now, but yeah.
Yes, a little too late. But no, I thought she's fantastic and I would like to follow her as a character. I mean, she really plays the role well. I liked her in The Walking Dead and I'm loving her in this one.
And it's great. Why it's a great Enterprise didn't change things enough. Voyager didn't change things enough. This is changing things. We're sticking with her character. It's not the ship. I mean, it's called Discovery.
We don't see it in the first two episodes.
Discovery doesn't turn up in the first two. And I think, is that ship called Discovery? Did it have Discovery written on the dish when we saw sneaks of it? Or is it going to be like, Discovery is all about her discovering herself and the universe?
Discovering of Discovery.
I think it is Discovery because I think Jason Isaacs was kind of sold as the captain of the Discovery.
Right. Who hasn't turned up yet.
And here's the thing, right? I mean, in that sense, the pilot kind of unfolds a little bit like Voyager, because Voyager started off in the same way. You get to meet the captain, you meet the first officer, you meet all of this crew,
and then everybody
suddenly
dies.
Everything gets thrown for a loop.
Yeah.
And
I particularly remember did the doctor get it really bad? Some people got it like real
in
bad.
Voyager?
Yeah, like there was some explosion. It wasn't just the usual exploding comm panels. There was like gravity going off, people getting slammed against walls and stuff.
There were quite a few cool bits in this one, I think. I liked how, and this is, It's one of those things that I've never really questioned, but it's nice to get answered. Like when, towards the end, I think of episode 2, they get into a real big sort of fight with the Klingons, right? So the one of the side panels of the bridge gets fired out, and it's sort of gaping hole to space, and then it goes.
The feels click in.
And I just like seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't watch too much Star Trek, so I always hear, you know, like, deck, whatever,
emergency
whatever
feels are holding.
Yeah, and I'm just like, to actually see it. I'm like, this is cool.
I think when Abrams did it with the 2009 Trek, there's that shot of the guy getting sucked out and then the shields kick in. So you have to do it now. And that's something I think we should talk about. The actual effects on this show. I mean, thank the great bird of the galaxy that they they delayed it this long.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because this is movie level quality.
Absolutely.
Throughout.
Yeah.
It feels expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've also gone with the J.J. Abrams aesthetic, though. There's
a
lot of lens flare.
Yeah.
Some of the musical notes also strike a very similar tone.
I think the first time that Michael sees the bridge, you hear the little...
Yes, that special effect.
Yeah,
right? The sound effect.
Hear,
which
was the very opening of the 2009 movie as well.
Correct.
The kind of the, it's like space sonar or LiDAR or whatever. Yeah.
But that being said, some things haven't changed, and I think I'm glad they didn't change it. So that World War II... aesthetic sensibility hasn't changed for the battles. There's still two battleships facing off and slowly firing things at each other.
But in the it's at the end of the first episode where the Klingon coffin ship appears. What I loved was like, this is a new Star Trek. The ships aren't on the same plane in space.
Oh yeah,
they're off angle. The Shenzhou is at 30 degrees to the other ship. Oh, finally! Because
so
like,
it's not just everybody driving.
Everyone always points. Everyone always like drives and faces each other at the same like level.
Yes, I thought
that was a nice thing. The battle as well. Ships are coming in all over the place, and it looks again. It shows you how effects have come along because it's the kind of battle you would get. Like, it would take a season of Deep Space Nine budget saved up to get one of those battles for the Dominion War.
Mm.
Whereas now it's just like we'll just do this in episode two.
Mm. Yeah, great.
That said, I hate it when starships are in atmosphere on planets. It just annoys the hell
everybody
out of
else. Duck.
They did it in. If it's one thing they would leave alone in the J'Abrams versus the idea that they build these things on Earth and they can like go under the bloody sea. And I'm with Scotty on this one. It's you don't put a starship under the ocean. And the idea that it's not a big deal, like these things are built in space for space. I mean, they have semi-magic technology in certain things, like slamming, you know, holes in your ship closed and keeping them closed for quite a while with that, when all the other power and everything's going off.
Yeah.
But these things are they're all built around this neck and this saucer section. It's going to snap in two if you put it anywhere near a gravity well. On Voyager, it was a big deal.
Mm.
And on this, it's just like, hey, there's a ride. I'm like, ah.
I will say when I was watching it, and then the shot of the ship sort of coming in past the clouds or the storm, whatever. My first thought was, he ain't gonna love this.
Yeah. And before you write in, yes, I know about structural integrity fields. I've read the Star Trek technical manual. They wouldn't hold under that kind of pressure.
Okay.
Anyway,
speaking of things that are winding us up.
Yeah, let's stand down from Red Alert.
No, I'll tell you what's winding me up. What's been winding me up is all of this online discussion about why Michelle Yeoh's character is called Philippa Georgiou. It's the 23rd century. She doesn't need a Malaysian name.
The Federation is a giant big melting pot and they're all just getting it on with everybody.
Yeah. We're past that now. Yeah.
She's just clearly Philippa Georgiou, Greek or French origin type names.
No,
you know, everyone's banging everyone
else. But
here's
the thing, though, right? Like, was it ever really discussed that she'll be playing an Asian character?
No, let's give it up, right?
She's playing an Earth, by the point, what did they say? It's 2256, was it?
Something 20, like
2156. By that point, Earth is countries don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Like, countries are just geographical areas. I mean, they're no longer nationalistic areas. You're a citizen of Earth.
There is the very cool prop with the Wankulit in the background. Yeah. And I think it was meant as a little Easter egg. Sure, it's a Javanese Wankulit as opposed to a Malaysian one.
Yeah.
But everyone kind of got worked up about that, about cultural appropriation. And I was just like, you know what? It's the 23rd century.
Yeah.
There are no cultures left
to
appropriate.
Here's the thing,
everyone's
right?
One big beige-looking community.
But so would you rather, as a Malaysian, would you rather it have not been a Wayang Kulit in the background and Dato' Michelle Yeoh in the seat, just instead of getting it right? Like, look, she's there.
Yeah.
I'm just really happy that she did so well. I mean, she has a Janeway-like calm as captain.
Oh, she's way better than Janeway.
She's way better than Janeway, that's for sure. But, you know, she carries it with that similar characterization even in the face of an extreme crisis, right? Which is very, very cool.
But that's why she's captain.
That's why she's captain.
I mean, you don't get to be captain in Starfleet. And it's the thing. I wonder whether they're going to play it out where, because, like, all admirals in Star Trek are always evil. Like, no matter what happens, it turns out the admiral was behind it, or they want to break up the Enterprise crew, or they want to throw people at the board. You know, they want to do something all the time. They're always bad. But there is a point in this show of, like, to make it to the captain of your own ship with all these lives in your hands, you have to be a terribly confident officer.
Mm.
And the conflict in this show from the off isn't a conflict that comes within this. Some of it comes from within the crew, which Gene Roddenberry didn't really want. He didn't want people to be in this future. Everyone should be like, you're not insecure or fighting for your back because it's, you know, you're out there trying to win hearts and minds or something like that. It's that, you know, they're dealing with these extreme outside situations. And in this case, it's like, yeah, they're dealing with a completely unknown situation, and following the Star Trek rule, the Starfleet rule book might not be the way to go. And she might not be the captain that will realize that.
Well, which is why I think Michael's actions are quite reprehensible. In that, you know, Sonico Martin Green's character basically does a Vulcan neck pinch on her captain because
I was like, what?
Yes, I know. And I was just like, what is going on? This, you cannot come back from this, right? But then her justification, I thought her justification was very Trek. I know I've read some of the stuff outside where people were like, you know, she was forgiven too easily, which she wasn't, by the way.
No.
But at the same time, I thought it was very Trek, because when you watch even the original series, even for Kirk and even for Spock, the crew and the family were most important to them.
Yeah.
And that superseded even Star Trek regulation. She says that. She's like, you were more important to me. Your life was more important to me than some stupid rule book.
And that's where the conflict comes from. It's not like some stupid thing, or it's like, oh, they kind of set it up that from everyone else's perspective, it's because of her relationship with the Klingons, because they did kill her family back on this colony that she was on, with the science colony on Earth, Vulcan colony. But they kind of set that up, but she's like, no, it's not that. And she's not wrong. But then she does some actions that are purely logical because she has been raised by Vulcans, and she's quite wrong in that. And then the emotions wash over her, and Doug Jones, tall Doug Jones, is on the bridge.
Yes.
Yeah. He can obviously see you're not working right well right now. Yeah. You get sweaty forehead. You're going on here.
Can I also say, Doug Jones can do anything well, even with layers of makeup over his face.
Yeah, that's great. That's
I mean, if you don't know who Doug Jones is, he is, of course, was in Hellboy, Hellboy 2,
he
Pan's
played the
Labyrinth.
Pale man in the Pan's Labyrinth, the guy with the hands and the
eyes. That's
right. I was going to say, like, I like the interaction between the first officer and Doug Jones.
Yeah.
That
he plays Lieutenant Saru.
Yeah.
The fact that, like, he's trying to get a fix, and he's so buttoned down that he won't give an answer till he's got the 100% answer.
Yeah.
And she's like nudging him over the console. Yeah. They're like little kids. Yeah. And the show's all like, play nice.
Yeah, yeah.
She even says at one point, Helmsman, take a note, my senior officers are in agreement.
Yeah.
Love the date.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of, I hope they keep that. I hope the two characters still come back.
I think he's listed for a bit longer.
For a bit longer, yeah. Yeah. I like that banter. Yeah. Well, not banter, but that fighting the arguments they had.
I think we'll go across both episodes, right?
So,
yeah.
Like, the fact that all that build up with her being super logical about trying to save the crew and thinking, you know, the Klingons are a rabid dog. You gotta bark loud and make it back off. But then being super emotional after that, because she's human, she can't repress that stuff. And being like, the bridge crew can see that.
Yeah. And then Michelle up and as well.
Yeah, and then Malaysians are quicker recoverers from Vulcan nerve pinches than anyone else in the universe.
Yeah, correct.
She's back there with an old school phaser.
Yeah. Yes.
Which also they took from J.J. Abrams, blue to stun, red to kill.
Yes. Yeah.
So they have all that stuff. But then it reinforces the fact that she was kind of right when she comes back from the brig.
Yeah.
And then what happens on the Klingon ship at the end of the episode is like, she's completely, again, her emotions. Like, it is a nice battle. She's not Spock battling with her emotions. He was logic battling with emotions. She's kind of like, her emotions have always been there. They've been kind of being tempered by her logic. But at the end, she could have easily stunned Tecumseh when they were on the bridge. Her gun was set to stun. Yeah. She took the time to set it to kill, because boy, was she mad.
Yeah. She was raging. I mean, you killed my best friend.
Yeah.
And I was raging.
And even though this was my plan, was to take him alive, and I know that killing this guy will make him a martyr.
Yeah.
I open a war. I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. And you know what? I was raging because I was like, you kill Michelle, yo.
Yeah.
Hey, can I just say, we called it after watching that trailer.
Yeah, that's true. Special guest star, come on. But the fact that they get all of that variance in character, and it's not season 4.
Yes.
No. Yeah. No.
Usually characters are like, he's the funny one. He's the kind of warrior one. He's Mal Reynolds. You know.
Even that relationship between the three of them is established within 5 minutes between Saru, the captain, and number one.
There is some clunky things in there. It's like, well, you have been serving me for 7 years, because there's backstory.
Yeah. No. I mean, so that's what that was one of my big, I guess, complaints, which I was telling Bahir after I watched it, which was I felt the dialogue was a little clunky at some points, especially with that kind of stuff. You know, you've been working with me for so long and you still don't have your own ship.
Yeah.
That's a setup for a letdown later.
It took Riker 4 seasons to even get that conversation going.
And even with the Klingon, I thought some of that stuff was a bit forced.
I mean, I like
you don't notice it so much because it's all said in Klingon.
True, but I don't remember the old Klingon being so staccato.
Yeah.
Yes.
It didn't seem they seemed to be talking like this all the time. As opposed, it never really flowed. Where I thought it flowed more in some of the older shows. That could just be my ears.
It just felt like maybe they needed to practice with the language a bit more.
It did
or
flow, but I think that was just a design choice, right? Okay. I think they just went with, hey, you guys talk like this.
Because you're military Klingons.
Kind of, right? That being said, with everything that's been going on, and there's a lot that happens in this episode, it's still really, really focused on these two women. And, you know, hooray for diversity and all that stuff. I mean, this is the first time we're seeing... It's essentially... It's a feminist revenge fantasy, right, that happens within this episode. Yeah. And, you know, I thought they pulled it off really, really well. And for an hour and 20 minutes, you get... The primary focus is on Michelle Yeoh and Sonequa Martin-Green. Mm. Yeah. Everyone else is secondary.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really well done because I was compelled throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
You believe they were real characters in a real situation who had been friends for quite some time.
Yes.
Also, coming off the fact that Star Trek is the squarest sci-fi TV show there is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's really cool to pull off.
Yeah.
I will say there was one thing, apart from the ship being in atmosphere, I can let slide.
Okay.
The thing that really drove me. Something was worse than that.
Something was worse than that. When Burnham was sent to the brig, and the brig gets like, there's damage on across three whole decks, and that includes the bridge, and they're like, ah, she's dead, never mind. But she's not, and she's kept in this little cube of air that's going to run out at some point. And the way she argued with the computer was bang your head off the table, dumb.
It was.
She was arguing with the computer about like, oh, if I'm going to die, you should embrace the ethical protocol, which would like get me the hell out of here and into some more oxygenated areas.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't do that because you're in the brig. It's like, yeah, but I'm going to die. It's like, oh yeah, how about you torpedo me across the door like by opening a small hole in the shield? Okay, I'll do that. Protocols engaged. Like, what the hell?
She just outlogic the computer.
But like, so, why does that? I mean, I think so that's a screenwriting patch that was maybe like they hadn't figured that out when Fuller left, and it's basically we need to show that she is thinking clear and can come up with clear situations, and she's not just a rage monster.
Yeah. So for me, I think that's what it was. I think that was a way to show how her Vulcan training worked, right? That she was so logical, and that this is her logic in practice.
I mean,
this is how it works, and this is why she actually betrayed her captain there.
Yeah.
Because in her logical mind, she was saving her life.
Because it was logical, it wasn't just an emotional thing.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. So they had to reinforce that before she gets back on the bridge. And I was like, ugh. And this is after she has a telepathic phone call with Sarek, which I also wasn't a huge fan of. It's like, I would have been interested if it was like a part of Sarek was with her the whole time.
But
he's like, oh, this is a bit of a toll on me because it takes maintaining long distance calls is very tiring.
No, but that's okay because, you know, kind of it's hinted at in, you know, Star Trek 3 that McCoy.
No, remnants. But that was like a mind meld.
That
was using McCoy as a psychic USB stick.
Yes, but.
So they could replug it into Spock later.
The remnants existed always.
But McCoy was wacky because there was a bit of Spock in his brain. If there was a bit of Sarek in her brain that she could see that was like her Jiminy Cricket, her conscience or whatever, that'd be cool.
No, he was making a long distance phone call.
Is he like sitting at a dinner table or something? I was like, hang on, I got a call coming in. Yellow, you know?
And everybody else is just like, do we just keep going?
Yeah, do we just keep going? It's
do we wait?
What happens if he's driving the car? I'm not going to go there. What I did like about that moment was he said, like, I can't abide a waste of good resources.
Yes.
One thing he said. And the other thing he said was, so get out there and find the people who, what was it? Get out there and find a way to help the people who need it.
Yeah.
And that was, I thought, really nice. And a really nice way of summing up the Vulcan code, the infinite diversity, infinite combination, and all that kind of stuff. And I like that.
And that works, right? And also it works because it stays true to that Star Trek philosophy, but also breaks it when it's necessary. So it stays true with the idea that they're always talking. They never go headfirst into battle, right? Mm. At the same time, this, what you said earlier about we coming in peace being a problem for the Klingons.
They call it that. They keep referring it to their fatal greeting.
And you know, that's a way to spin that on its head. And I think that's a great direction to take the story.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, the pilot, given how it was purely focused on these two characters, it doesn't set anything else up.
Mm.
And I think that's a function of living in a world of serialized television.
Oh, yeah. But they'll fill it in later. We're going to go see some Federation worlds. We'll see some backwater planets. Mm. We're going to see all that stuff later.
I think so, too. And I can't wait to see Rainn Wilson play Harry Mudd, who was in the original series, and he's reprising the role. He's reimagining the role for the new series.
Harry Mudd was in the original series, not
Rainn Wilson. Yeah, that's right.
He played Baby.
And I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah. And I saw, like, there's the Hollywood Reporter or something had, where will Discovery go next? I mean, most of the reaction has been good, but they're talking about Captain Lorca, which is Jason Isaacs' character, who will looks like turn up and kind of he needs this loose cannon as his first on board. They're talking about he's going to be a different kind of captain because Michelle Yeoh very clearly says the Federation, the Starfleet, it's not the Federation, it's because of Starfleet, right? The Starfleet does not fire first.
Yes.
That is, we come in peace.
Yeah.
Whereas what's coming is the biggest threat the Federation has seen till this point, and it needs people who think outside that box. And I think Star Trek and Starfleet, it's always the combination of those kind of things. I mean, it works really, really well as a war paradigm, because how does this utopian egalitarian society deal with an outside threat that can't be won over with tea or
a conversation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're always like, you know, you either have the choice to leave or talk to us. There's not like, fight isn't really an option. When they're communicating.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, we want to fight. So what are you going to do? And the Federation's like, I'm going to go home, take my ball with me.
The Federation's like, hello to Jason Isaacs.
Yes.
Right? But I don't think, yet again, I don't think we're going to get a show that's about a white male captain either. I think it's going to be focused on Michael.
They've said this. This is all focused on her. And I mean, Brian Fuller left, but he wanted to do, I think the first season would be all her, and then the next season could be anywhere in time and space. They could just do these anthology shows.
And I would love to see that.
I would
but
love
I
that.
Don't yeah. think it's going to happen. I would love to see like an American Horror Story take on Star Trek, where every season's different, right? Yeah. That being said,
there's a whole season on Deep Space Eight.
Brian Fuller left for reasons that still remain unclear.
Yeah.
He
got to do American Gods.
He's like,
which of my babies do I choose?
Which one do I focus?
Yeah. And you know, and that's a brilliant show in itself. Yeah. If you don't know Brian Fuller, he of course did Pushing Daisies, Dead Like Me, Hannibal, which is great.
Yeah.
It's also got some great pedigree, man. It's got Alex Kurtzman in it, who helped Abrams out with his movies. It's got Akiva Goldsman. Yeah. Who wrote
has a spotty
he
run.
Does. Yeah. He wrote A Beautiful Mind, but he also wrote Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's got Nicholas freaking Meyer as a producer,
who
directed Star Trek 2. Yeah. He wrote Star Trek 4 and 6, all three of the best Star Trek movies.
So it's not that even numbers are the best movies. It's that Meyer movies are the best movies.
Exactly. Mm. And he's also an uncredited writer on Star Trek 2. So he's written and directed all of the best Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
Which fills me with some level of confidence, even though Fuller's gone.
And they have a little bit of that hint of like starships and submarines, that kind of feel to it. You know, I mean, like they are. I mean, even though we're getting the pew 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 laser phasers and photons and torpedoes, we're not really seeing that much. But like, you're seeing them maneuver. Like, they can stand facing each other for 2 hours and nothing happening.
Yeah,
like they have that slowness to them, which like it facilitates all the talky bits we want to see, because we want to see those talky bits, or facilitates going down to the captain's ready room to look out her telescope, which is a nice touch because they couldn't get a visual sync or something.
That's quite fun. Yeah, that's quite cool. Yeah,
it was a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, it was weird that the Shenzhou, I think it's going to be the same design as the Discovery, I'm not sure, but it doesn't really have a solid saucer section.
No.
In the opening, it's got like a ring and a sphere, which makes sense for a science vessel, I think it is. But the underslung bridge is a new thing. I don't think anyone's ever had the bridges underneath the saucer section instead of on top of it, which is, you know, that they haven't done that before.
I've got nothing to say.
Yeah. I also like the design of all the Klingon ships, because they're all different.
Yeah.
They're all different.
They're like 24 houses.
They kind of have the, like, everything has a hint, like the Shenzhou looks like a little bit like the Enterprise level ships, the NX class, where like there's no real lower hull. It's like the saucer section with the kind of the warp nacelles coming off it.
Yep.
So it's a very flat ship. And I think the Discovery might be where they start building the ones, the secondary hulls. The Klingons are the same, where they have that basic kind of bridge / kind of conning tower at the front with the engines towards the back and kind of wings coming down to it. But yeah, there was a huge variation in it. That huge old ship that was like, the idea of Klingons is like, it looks like concrete engraved in metal.
Yeah.
Like the Torchbearer guy armor that turns up. That's
very cool.
But like, it's not, she had to look for a logo. Where's the maiden Klingon?
Yeah.
Like,
well, they claim they haven't encountered the Klingon in like 100 years or something like that. Yeah. And that kind of gives that away. I mean, they do break continuity because a lot, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, when Kirk first comes upon a cloaking Klingon ship, it was the first time they encountered a cloaking Klingon ship, which supposedly happened much later. Mm. But all of that's kind of irrelevant at the moment. I think as long as they tell a good story.
The ship that decloaked, that was like, if you doubt my ships can decloak, it was like a giant boat, or like someone threw the Titanic at the Europa.
Crashing into the Europa.
He did say that it was his
father's ship that was broken down?
That was his one, the one he was on board. The Convo was on his father's ship because it was the same shape. Whereas this other one had like a bow on it, like a boat that curved. That was just like you see the saucer section just get crumpling and you don't know what's hitting it. Like,
oh no, but it was the bit before that when the Admiral was having a conversation on hologram, right?
Yeah, the hologram.
And then suddenly he go like, wait. What?
Yeah, he's like,
what?
No.
That was really cool.
Yeah, the holograms, I mean, it's probably, you know, technology progresses. It will take until the 23rd century for people to realize that, no, having to stand up to take a phone call is dumb. I just want to sit behind a desk and be on a screen on a wall. And that's when they'll get back to those again. You know, technology moves forward and backwards. Yeah, it's like, do I want a bezel? Do I not want a bezel?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Do I want a headphone jack?
Do I want a headphone jack?
Do I want to stand up and turn around and look at people through my hologram? Or do I just want to sit in a chair and look at the screen and go, what's up, dog?
So Ian's not a fan of the hologram.
I just think it's like that's going to cost... Anytime they make a phone call, it's going to take cost more money than long distance in the US.
Maybe it's just an admiral thing, right? Yeah. You want to have a stand-up meeting with your admiral, right? So that's a formal conversation.
Here's your ranking insignia, and here's your hologram phone.
Yes, there you go.
It's not even a hologram phone, because he's got to be in a room where he sees everything around him.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. It's overcomplicated in-universe. It's an effect. It's an unnecessary effect. Just put him on the wall, or just like, oh, hello, Captain, TV. You're the voice. Yeah. Because they're going to have to spend money on that every episode, where it could be like, let's throw another Klingon ship in there, or let's have an alien who's a squid. What's the Daft Punk crew member?
That was pretty cool. I don't know who that is, but it was cool.
Because it's kind of, again, they've got the guy with the sucker thing, the kind of like the Lobot from Star Wars head thing going on.
Yeah.
But like, the are they the ship's avatar? Are they a computer? Because they have like the USS Shenzhou on the side. So are they a race of robot-headed people that the Federation has subjugated?
Maybe.
I mean, I think there was something like that again in... the Jabrams verse, there was a robot-headed person, and it was just like, this looks cool, but like, the TV shows are about the depth and breadth of the universe. Like, they mentioned the Federation only being humans, Vulcans. You know, if we get sucked into the Federations, we'll be living alongside humans, Vulcans, Tellarites, and Andorians. They didn't mention anyone else, and that's kind of cool. Tellarites are kind of the hairy dudes, and Andorians are blue. I can't wait to see if they revamp those again.
And the Romulans are going to be Japanese, just like how the Klingons are German.
Yeah.
We'll see if they stick to Gene Roddenberry's racist tendencies, right?
Okay.
But you know, it's a remarkably good start. I think we all feel, and we're really looking forward. I haven't been this excited to see a Star Trek show in a long time.
Yeah,
I'm looking at you, Enterprise.
Yeah. Despite all the, it got good this. No.
Let me tell you, even Sam Beckett couldn't save that. No. Like,
That's where he got stuck after leaping through time. He got stuck on the bridge of the Enterprise and was forced to live out his life there.
Yeah.
It ends incredibly strong. She's talking about like her purpose is to serve. And like, I wanted to save us from an enemy, not realizing that I am the enemy. So it's like, you've got this character who's supremely confident. And just completely knocked down. And you know, and also, they're going to spend the rest of their life in jail.
Where do you go from there? I want to see how they write her out of that. And I think that's going to take some really solid writing, because they just basically end with going, yep, you're sentenced to life in prison.
And it's not like there was any extenuating circumstances, or you saved half the crew. You saved people.
Doesn't matter. You killed the big Klingon bad guy. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
And you know, you didn't just kill him, you murdered him. It wasn't self-defense. Like, you could have transported shot like, him. I've got a lock. It's like, give me a second.
Boop. Shot him in the back.
Right in the back. So I wonder if the white guy as well, the albino Klingon, is going to be developed as the new villain.
It looks like it, though.
Because he's
like
the outcast, right?
Yeah, it feels like it's sort of leaning towards that. Because, I mean...
There's still... Yeah, I think you're right. No, I was going to say there are still some other guys who were there, but no one had any focus on them except for the albino.
Exactly, and the guy who said, like, oh, my brother was a torchbearer, but I don't know, I'm going to peace out, man. Maybe I ain't got so good.
No, but it's also the kind of thing where, like, I mean, just in, like, for filming language, right, he's white. He stands out. He's gonna be the next guy because you don't see any of the other Klingons, right? Yeah. I mean, you see them, but they don't really
stand out. They're all like ebony, right?
Yeah. This one's just like, woo.
And also, I mean, all their stuff has been upgraded. You see, they gave him a Batleth that was like, I think it was a Batleth, and it was like three times bigger than the old next-gen Batleths and incredibly ornate. It's like you pick this thing up and just like, oh, the weight.
It was cool, though. He was like, yeah, you can take mine, right? Yeah. That was cool. Okay, that was cool.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
No, it's a good show. It's a good show. It's a good start.
Can't wait to see where it goes next. And I'm probably going to be super mad when it pauses in the middle of the season.
There is still hope, though, because, you know, while Michelle Yeoh may be dead in the present, we've seen that this Star Trek employs flashbacks.
Yeah.
No, hang on.
I think they have said, like, I did see one interview saying that they might do something with their way they would flashback. Because they have flashbacks throughout. Mm. Like, the whole of her life, of whole of Michael's life. They didn't just say like, "Oh, here's kid Michael, and here's you know grown up." Like it was great when she got to the bridge and she's pure, totally Vulcan.
Yes,
the and first she's time, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Yeoh makes that joke about like, "Oh, it's not a greeting; it's like first contact." And it's like, yes, maybe.
Yeah. Well, as I was telling a friend of mine, you know, she died off screen.
Oh, who knows?
I'm just saying.
No, did she?
Because you know,
there was no life signs.
But she got beaten straight out.
But they didn't take the body.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is
so,
weird.
So yeah, maybe the Klingons
resuscitated her for torture.
Yeah.
Like Locutus of Borg.
I don't know.
Michelle Yeoh of
the Klingons seem like more the people to kill, to eat what they kill rather than resurrect it and use it for a plot point
later.
That's
true. Yeah, that's true.
Let us know what you think when you catch Star Trek Discovery. Actually, you should have already caught it by now because we've just spoiled it to all hell.
Everything. Yeah.
Let us know what you think. Did you enjoy it? Are you a Trek fan? Is this not your cup of tea? I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm at Bahewai.
I'm at McNasty Prime.
Once again, Star Trek Discovery is on Netflix over here as well as globally. And so we get to see it on the day of
Mondays.
Launch, right?
Yeah, 4 p.m. Mondays after the Mondays. Every Monday.
Is that right? Okay, so 4 p.m. the Monday after the launch in the United States. So you can watch it on Netflix. This is Binge Watch on At The Movies, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.